Julian McCulloch.
What up? I don't talk like that.
Well, so you're back for season four.
I am, yeah. And I missed everybody, and I'm very glad to be back.
You were very missed.
I thought I would come back, and Ryan Ling would have a full gold grill in his teeth, because this show is a hit.
And a full head of hair.
Yeah, and a full head of hair. Like some young Filipino boy's hair that you bought online. But
I saw you had to answer like a lot of tweets when season three started. Like, why aren't you on Geico?
Yeah, I got to be sincere for a second. I was really touched because nobody has a attention span anymore. As soon as somebody's gone, they're, you know what I mean? Like, and I didn't come back for season three, and so many people asked me where I went that it really touched me, and it was a huge reason why I wanted to come back, because I didn't think anybody would care that I was gone.
Nah.
And then like so many people, it was like, and it would just keep happening like for months and months. Mm. And I was just like, all right, you know, it made me happy to be able to say, okay, I'm coming back, because yeah, you know,
we were running around high-fiving each other when you were coming back for season four.
Yeah, so but
super happy to have you back.
It didn't occur to me that you guys cared. Yeah. I'm doing it for the fans, all
that's,
right?
That's the MTV model. We're like, we can do this without you.
Yeah, exactly. That's like Viacom's, like, you know, mission statement is the talent is the least important person. Are we ever going to cut that?
Got to take that.
No, yeah.
But I don't know how to edit out anything. So.
I'm surprised, like, the dudes from The Matrix don't come into the room right now in sunglasses like, and take me away. Yeah.
You've had so many classic jokes and animations from the first three seasons.
Yeah, and I was the only cat guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, that'll help you stick out.
I think we put Pop-Tarts in season three without you.
Oh, did you?
I wanted Pop-Tarts to live on.
I reveal in season four, tune in, because I reveal the Pop-Tarts' destiny in season four. What's going on with her right now?
It's a little teaser right there.
Yeah.
A little
teaser.
2014 for that. But I think a lot of people just assume when you're not on a show that it was like some kind of acrimonious split, but you just moved to LA, right?
Yeah, I moved to LA. I got involved in another show that got immediately canceled. and it was called Love You Mean It with Whitney Cummings, and I was her co-host. And then I, you know, doing Guy Code at the time would have been like... E was being very strict about other stuff that I was doing, which is so screwed up because they didn't do any promotion for our show. So, like, they were like, you can't do anything else. And by the way, we're not advertising that you're on our network. So it was a real it sucked. But E has been cool to me ever since. You know, like, I'm not complaining too much about it. But it was the reason why I couldn't come back and do Guy Code. And, you know, I had to try and see if I could get my own thing going, and I'm still trying to do that, but once I was able to do it again, I was like, of course I'm going to go back if they'll still have me. Yeah. And you guys didn't hold a grudge, which is Guy Code. Thank you.
Absolutely. I felt you were underutilized on Love You
on
Mean
that
It.
Show.
Yeah, I was like, I wanted more Julian.
Yeah, I mean, but the network, you know, wanted me to get. I was actually getting more stuff in the last couple episodes. I was getting my own segment. I was throughout the episode a little bit more, but then it didn't work out. But I mean, so many shows get canceled so fast now. Yeah. It's not like the old days. The old days, they used to let shows breathe for a long time until they found an audience. And now you got a hit on the first week or people are like, or the network might just cut you.
Yeah.
You know, this show was huge right away, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think it was MTV2's first original show in a really long time.
Yeah.
So people were hungry for it, but yeah.
I remember watching the first episode after I was, you know, we did the taping. Like, because when I remember getting the offer and being like, yeah, sure, because I didn't know. I'd done so many things for MTV, MTV2, VH1, you know, and I thought it was going to be similar to that. I thought it was going to be like a bunch of random comedians and you might get one joke in and that was going to be it. And it was like, you know, oh, Britney Spears, whatever. And then I saw the cut of the first episode, and I was like, oh, this is like a real cast. Like, they were actually trying to get the same personalities back, and you get more time on screen, and you really get a chance to, like, express, you know, your joke or your opinion on something. And it was really entertaining. It was, like, actually fun to watch rather than, you know, the top 40, you know, I'm not funny right now because I'm so hungry. But just know, if I had eaten this lobster roll and then done a top 40 joke, it would have been awesome.
It would have hit hard.
Yeah. By the way, I made fun of, so I don't know if the people that watch the show know this, but when you're in that room, when you're on camera, there's a producer, usually named Andy Stuckey, who is asking you questions and then you're supposed to answer. And I made fun of him today for crossing his legs like a woman and saying that that's the freedom you get when you turn 30, is that you can start crossing your legs like a woman. Now, I don't know, you guys can't see this at home. Ryan Ling, creator of Gaia Code, still sitting like a man, not crossing his legs at all.
Like a junior high basketball player right now.
I really hope you guys put that in the show because it's weird to make fun of somebody that's off camera, but I think it needs to be in there. It's an important message that Andy Stuckey sits like
that.
A woman.
Yeah.
So when you turn 30, you're allowed to cross your legs. And if you're
you can cross your legs like a girl. Mm-hmm. You can really get into like textures, like blankets and stuff. Like you can really get into that. Like I'm wearing a wonderful wool sweater. It's so soft. Do you want to feel it?
I'm really jealous.
Yeah, it's really nice.
I think you and I have a...
And I'm allowed to enjoy this sweater in a way that when I was 25, I wouldn't be allowed to admit. You know, I used to have to wear sandpaper jackets and shit like that.
You can say things to yourself like, so soft.
Yeah. I enjoy scents now. I have an array of candles at my house that make it smell like an exotic tobacco factory in Portugal. So it's, you know, there's a lot of nice things about getting older as a dude. You can just relax.
I had written this down, actually, but one of the bad things about turning in your 30s, it feels like it's harder to make friends.
Oh, yeah. You can't make any friends in your 30s. Well, first of all, when you're 18 and you first get to college, making friends is like the easiest thing in the world because all you need is one thing in common. That's all you need. Like, you walk into a guy's room and he has a poster Alice in Chains on the wall, you hold hands for 4 years. Like, it's like awesome. Once you're 30, like...
Was that your experience?
Yeah. You can not be friends with someone for, like, no reason when you're 30. Like, you know, if I'm friends with Ryan Ling, for example, right? And then I meet you, Ryan, and I go, hey, what's your name? And you say...
Ryan.
I go, I can't do it. I already have one. Like, that's the kind of rules that happen over 30. Or like if they live too like, in a neighborhood where the parking, there's no parking.
Yeah.
Sorry. Can't be friends.
Even if I vouch for him, I'm like, Ryan,
please. Guys just get set in a routine as we get older. We're like, stop bringing on new friends.
I think it's because it's so hard to maintain whatever handful of relationships you've held on to into your 30s. It's so hard to do it that you can't open that shit up to more. I mean, it's like hard enough to maintain the, you know, the important ones. Yeah. But
you just don't have enough time.
A lot of guy friends are friends based on work. Like, I've actually pitched shows. Well, podcasts are the new place where guys can be friends because we can't.
Where we catch up.
Yeah, we're too busy to hang out if we're not recording.
Yeah.
Actually, not recording. We just wanted to hang out.
God damn it. I should have known it. I'm eating my sandwich. No, but yeah, they, yeah, you got to like make it. If you really want to make new friends as a guy, you got to get a job where guys look cool that you want to be friends with. You know what I mean? Like, I guess I'll get a job at this sandwich shop.
It's more common to lose friends in your 30s. You're like,
we
just don't hang out anymore.
Yeah. Plus Netflix. There's like Netflix, HBO Go, you know.
Guy Code Podcast.
I mean, seriously, name a guy in your life, if you're home listening to this right now, name a guy that's better than Boardwalk Empire. You can't do it.
You grew up in Jersey, right?
Yeah, I grew up all over. I have one of those I don't want to say sad childhoods, but I had an unstable childhood.
A vagabond.
My parents moved us around for almost no reason. We were just like, they never really had careers. They just got jobs. So like when stuff got, they just didn't like a spot anymore. They were looking for like a slightly better spot, you know. And so we would move. Like when I was in fifth grade, we were living in San Francisco, and my parents said, we're moving because we're sick of looking for parking all the time. So they put all our stuff in a van and drove cross country with no destination in mind. And they were like, when we see a town we like, we'll just move there. And that was Pittsfield, Massachusetts, and we lived there for a year, and then that didn't work out because my dad couldn't get a job anywhere but a grocery store stacking fruit. So then we moved again to South Jersey, and that's where I went to high school. And then that's where I really developed my personality as like a sarcastic douchebag. It's like from Philadelphia,
what
which is
what is it about Jersey that breeds that?
I don't know. It's Philly. It's Philly culture and Boston culture to just like immediately assume someone is trying to fuck with you and that you're gonna show them that you get it first. Mm. So like, when someone might legitimately be asking you for help in Philadelphia, like, hey, where's Pine Street? And you're like, what am I, a fucking asshole? I don't know where Pine Street is. Like that's what that's like the attitude down there. And so, but it's funny, you know. Unfortunately, it's also racist and homophobic. So you got to kind of grow out of that part. But
do you have any stories from like when you moved to a new place and you didn't know yet what the established quota was? Kind of a different Geico's different places.
Well, I remember when I got to New Jersey from San Francisco, I stopped telling people soon that I was from San Francisco because people in New Jersey were like, what are you, gay? And I'm like, do you literally think everybody that lives in San Francisco is gay? That would make no sense. That town would die out eventually if they weren't making new people. But yeah, like when I got to Jersey, they actually thought that, you know, I had to be a little bit meaner and I had to be a little more masculine. Like I had to be a little more manly than I was when I got there, because that was just, you know, I got into sports and I started doing all that stuff. And I'm glad I did. I mean, I know guys that are born and raised in San Francisco, and they're very friendly, but you're like...
You're not one of them.
They're like, this is my girlfriend, Susan, and you're like, is it? My sister lives in San Francisco, and she always says it's hard to find, like, real men in San Francisco. And I am not disparaging them. I'm just saying there's, like, it's hard to find, like, a dude that, like, works with his hands, you know, that's ready to throw down and fight. Like, it's like you're not going to find those guys in San Francisco.
Similar to Brooklyn now, probably.
Yeah. Brooklyn is actually, like, hipster Williamsburg is, like, the same way. It's just, you know, a bunch of guys that would rather talk it out, which is fine. I'm one of those guys, you know, but I have a little bit of Philly in me anyway.
L.A. might be one of those places, too.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Well, there's also a lot of... dangerous parts of LA where there's I mean, maybe they don't work with their hands, but they own guns, so that's kind of scary and sexy or whatever.
It's called gang.
Yeah.
Gang atmosphere.
Yeah, no, there's not a lot of real men left in this country, and which is probably why this show is so important, cuz like people are like, "Well, what is it anymore?" You know? You got to go to like I'll perform in like Cleveland or some shit like that. And you know, I'm a comedian, so I'll be like, hey, man, what do you do? And they'll be like, I'm a mechanic. And I'll be like, I'll almost drop the mic. I'll be like, holy shit. Like, are your hands dirty? Is that real oil? Oh, my God.
What's that underneath your fingernails?
Yeah. And then, like, grease. Yeah, and they just, it's crazy. It's weird. When you meet a guy that has a real job, it's kind of shocking. Because everybody that I know is like, yeah, I run a blog, or I'm a graphic designer or some shit like that.
Yeah.
You know.
When you initially got cast in the show, did you think about that? Like, maybe I'm not the guy.
My first question when they asked me to be on the show was, are they going to do a background check? Because I'm not going to pass.
I think I remember you saying that.
Yeah. Well, that kind of became my character on the show, is like the guy that is, you know, like I just, like when we talk about the morning after and stuff, I'm like, hey, maybe you should just care about the girl you slept with.
Like, what?
The editor's like, like, wait, what?
I'm trying to think who the manliest man on the show is.
It's Damian Lemon.
Yeah. Damian and Gabrus, probably.
Charlemagne, I don't know. He wears a lot of jewelry. but, no, I think it's Lemon. Gabrus is like, I know what you mean. He's like rough around the edges and shit, but he's like, he's still kind of a goof.
Yeah,
and
it's like middle school goofy.
Yeah. But Damian has got a face like fucking, like from the 40s. You know, like he looks like he started the drug trafficking trade in Harlem in the 40s. Like, that's how hard he looks. And I love it because he said he used to work at Banana Republic and Gap Kids.
Really?
He used to work at Gap Kids. That's, and I'm like, they hired your face to work at Gap Kids.
They just stood him in the front.
I mean, I think Damian, like, I'm jealous of a guy of a look like that, you know, where you can walk down the street and know that, you know, everybody else is like, oh, fuck. I think it's like, awesome.
You know what your baby needs?
Yeah.
Some khakis.
Yeah.
We asked him, I remember we asked him for Halloween if he had any like childhood pranks that he did that he like remembered fondly. He's like, Halloween was scary where I grew up. He's like, people just
were like, why? Because you were out there?
Yeah.
It's Brownsville, New York.
Oh my, really?
Yeah, that's where he grew up.
No, he grew up in Brownsville? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's literally the worst place.
That place will not gentrify.
You hear the kind of stories out of Brownsville where you're like, it like ruins your day. When you when you hear the police blotter from Brownsville, you're like, oh my God, wait, that happened. That's not from like an epic poem from like a Greek tragedy. Yeah,
that's
it's crazy.
That's
I don't want to get into it.
But Brownsville.
Yeah. It's terrible. That place is no. It doesn't make any. I bet he came out like he was born adorable. And then Brownsville just made his face look like a hardened criminal.
So what do you miss most about living in New York?
What do I miss most about New York? You know, there's just something about the air and the water and the people that just feels more like home than LA ever will. You know, like New York feels like the Northeast to me is like. When you talk to somebody, you feel like you know what you're getting. And I'm not saying there aren't people that are full of shit here, but like, it just seems so much more
honest.
Yeah, like people are just more straightforward about what their agenda is, and so mm-hmm. and even if they have an agenda, they're open about it. You know what I mean? LA, there's like dudes wearing like surf chic outfits, you know, where they're like wearing like shorts and flip flops and have like long blonde hair, and then they're a fucking shark. Inside, you know what I mean? It's weird. Yeah. It's like they're all like, hey bro, whatever man, and then you find out like he's fucking stabbing people in the back. It's really strange. So people in New York, if they stab you in the back, they tap you on the shoulder right afterward and go, hey, by the way, that was me.
I couldn't ever wrap my head around it. I feel like the LA culture versus New York, it's very homogenous out there, whereas I like the...
Well, LA is incredibly segregated. That's the weird thing. Yeah. LA is like white people and everybody else somewhere else. Mm-hmm. It's really weird. It's like... So that is also a problem, definitely. I mean, you walk down the street in New York, you hear 8 languages, mm-hmm. you know. And what was I going to say about... Oh, well. There's something also, it's not just that people are mean to your face in New York. That's not my point. My point is like, people are trying to pretend like everything's okay all the time in LA. Like that's where the term, I don't know if you guys have heard the phrase Hollywood no, I know you have. But a Hollywood no is when they say yes, mm-hmm. but it means no. And what that means is they're so afraid of telling you that they don't want to work with you there or that they don't like you, that they'll act like to your face that they love you, but then as soon as you leave, they're like, we're not working with that guy. And then when you make it, when someone does give you a shot and you do become famous, now that person wants to work with you again, and you can't say to them, but you said no to me before, because they can still come to you and go, remember when we loved you first?
Yeah.
That's the kind of fake shit that I'm talking about. And that's what's annoying about
it. That's how all my relationships start.
With a Hollywood no?
I think you said on an episode that it's hard for you to mingle at parties. Is it easier or harder in LA?
I hate going to parties. Why do I hate parties? I hate parties. I really do. I go to a party, all I do is look for one person that I want to talk to, and then I just talk to that person the rest of the time. And in a corner. I don't know. I don't remember saying that it was hard for me to mingle at parties, though. Yeah. But it's true, so I must have said it.
I was at a going away party this weekend for some friends that are moving back to Ohio, but I made the mistake of showing up by myself to a party where I knew nobody else but the people leaving.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like all these graphic designers, and I got stuck talking to this one couple, and they, for about 10 minutes, told me how much they love Brussels sprouts.
No!
They're like, Union Square Farmers Market, you can get... Brussels sprouts.
But can I tell you something? If that had happened in LA, those people didn't even really like Brussels sprouts. They just wanted to sound like people that do love Brussels sprouts. At least in New York, you know those people are that boring, yeah. And they really love Brussels sprouts that much.
It was very genuine.
But yeah, also Ryan, I'm talking about Damian Lemon. You, just so people don't get confused me as being a racist, you have the same look Damian Lemon has. You're a terrifying looking dude.
I don't know why.
Yeah, well, just you just have that archetypal, you know, movie villain head and
strong jawline.
Yeah, and it's great because girls, as soon as they see the kindness in your eyes, the combination is irresistible, and they just, you know, they love it, right? They melt.
I spit on the sidewalk, and a girl was like, "You're so masculine." I was like, "What?"
Do you get different types of girls hitting on you now that, like, since you shaved your head?
I was never complimented for having hair, but since I've like just did the preemptive strike, everybody's like, you look really good with
plus I never noticed you got that fucking tight scar on your forehead. What's that from?
I hit a rock learning how to ride my bike.
Yeah, see, that's a white guy injury that looks great on your head.
I
have
a lot of scars. I've hit my grandpa's. My grandpa was a farmer in Kentucky, and he had this huge metal winch on the front of his truck. And I just watched Looney Tunes where like the bull runs really fast, like winds up his feet really fast.
Yeah.
And I was like, if I do that, I'm gonna be able to jump on top of the truck. I just ran straight into the winch. And just, I have a huge gash.
Oh my god, that's hilarious.
But yeah, I'm beat up.
That's pretty good.
Outside.
It's crazy because you see New York, you see some fucked up shit, and one of them is like, there's a lot of Africans that come here, and like straight off, you know, off the boat Africans, and you see some of them because you read about Africa and you're like, holy shit, like how the fuck, we gotta do something, you know what I mean? And then they come here. And you'll see a guy with a scar on his – he'll have a shaved head. And he'll have a scar that goes, like, all the way across his skull. And you're like, that's a machete scar. Like, that's real shit. And he's like – you know, and he's your caps – he's your taxi driver or whatever.
It's insane.
And, you know, you tip him.
Because like, you don't want to get a machete in your head.
You've seen – well, I also just, like, congratulations for making it, dude. Here's an extra $4.
Guys, I feel like – on Canal Street, you can see a lot of those.
That's where those guys are mostly. Yeah, they're selling now. They're selling like onesies that say "I love New York," and they have a machete scar across
just
their neck.
Stop them and be like, "What happened?"
It's like they had a second shot at life, and then they went to Canal Street and sold fake Chinese handbags.
They'll do anything just as long as they're not in Africa.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Most guys, you can ask them about their scars, and they're happy to tell you. But when a scar gets a certain size, you just like know not to ask.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to hear that story.
And also African.
Like, I had a baby.
You also don't want to ask an African where he got a scar, because that story is usually a 60-minute documentary that you can't even leave the house after you watch it.
So in your Conan set, you talked about being an English major at Rutgers.
Yeah. Well, I started with like four majors and ended up with English. But I made the decision to be an English major after I already got a job at a comedy club and knew I wasn't going to use my college degree anyway. So I was like, I'll just major in what I like, which is reading. I love reading books. Sorry. Is being smart not guy good? So, yeah, I loved writing papers and reading books and stuff. So I did that because I knew I just wanted to enjoy myself while I was there. And, you know, there was a few years after I graduated where I wasn't making a living in stand-up yet where I was like, maybe I fucked up because there are no options for me as an English major. But
At what age did you decide you wanted to be a stand-up?
Well, when I saw the ad, I loved stand-up my whole life but didn't know it was like a real thing I could go for. And then I went – and then the school paper at Rutgers – there was an ad for the local comedy club that needed somebody to seat the room, and I didn't even know there was a comedy club in town. And I will never forget, when I saw that ad, it was like a lightning bolt just like struck me in the chest, and I was like, I'm going to do stand-up comedy. It was like the most clear – I'm like a very wishy-washy guy. That was the most clear signal I've ever gotten in my life, and I never looked back. But you know, the reason I made it in stand-up is because I didn't have another option. Like, when guys come to me and they're like, what can I do? That's my car. What can I do if I want to do stand-up? Like, what's your advice? And my advice is always, don't have a plan B. Because if you have a plan B, you're going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
It's too hard to get in. So you're gonna don't develop any other skills.
It's not a comfortable thing, learning.
No. No, and it takes forever stand-up to get somebody to pay you to do it.
Yeah.
So your advice is, don't have a safety net.
Yeah, don't have a safety net, for real.
Yeah.
And it's probably bad advice, and hopefully a kid out there doesn't end up starving to death because he wasn't funny. But
it's going to happen. I heard Julian say it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know we need to wrap this up.
Okay.
Pretty soon. But you, since filming Guy Code, you are now a new father. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I have a 4-month-old baby girl. And I like having a daughter because she's gorgeous, and I love kissing her like 500 times a day, and I never have to be like, no homo. So that's good.
Were you terrified to have a daughter? Like,
no, part of me always knew, like, even when I was like just fucking around and, you know, just just like being an asshole. My, I mean, I fell in love to it. I was always in relationships. I was always fucking shit up. I was, you know, but everybody had fun. You know, I never like really devastated anybody's life or anything. Yeah. You know, it was just fun. But I always knew deep down I was going to have a kid. I didn't know when it was going to happen. I just assumed it would happen to me. And I can't believe I actually married somebody and planned having a child. Like, that I didn't see coming. But I was ready to go. I wanted it. Yeah. You know?
I have a 4-year-old niece, and my brother's like, having a girl is the best. I can't imagine having a guy. And I just don't agree with him yet. I feel like just the girls are more mature, and I don't know. I just can't get through having a daughter and being, I would be super overprotective. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I will drive myself probably insane.
Yeah. Well, I'm not looking forward to that. Yeah. And, you know, a lot of that, you got to rely on the woman you married too, you know, like she's going to be a big factor in how that kid, takes care of herself. So, you know, my wife went through the shit too, and she knows everything that goes on, and I feel like confident about how she'll handle that, and you know, my teenage daughter's not going to be too bad, I don't think.
It's probably a sign of being good parents that you're concerned.
Yeah. You what?
It's probably a sign of being good parents.
Yeah.
Being concerned.
Yeah.
Do you worry about raising her in LA?
A little bit, but we're excited because we just put an offer on a house, and the school is 60% Mexican and 20% Black, and my wife is ecstatic. She's like, so happy that it's not just like all white kids that are just like, I can't eat kale unless it's like sauteed or whatever. Like, I feel like
it just needs to be bruised.
We're avoiding that. So yeah, my daughter's gonna eat red beans and rice for lunch.
Have you discovered any new guy codes to being a father?
You know what it is? It's the hardest thing, and that's the guy code to being a father is to be humble, because you're never gonna out raise your kid when it comes to your wife. Like, the mom is doing all the shit. And you can't ever be like, yeah, I'm fucking nailing it as a dad, because you are at most doing 30% of the work. So you're used to like feeling good about yourself and bragging and having an ego and shit. But when it comes to being a dad, like, you are not the important one. So, I mean, you become important later, but
at best, you're doing what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
All right. We have some fan questions from Twitter.
Okay.
This comes from, at Marty Caproni, what kind of bowler is Jules? Is he any good?
A fucking varsity one. I had a 176 average in high school.
Damn.
I was on the varsity bowling team.
They had they didn't have that at my school.
Nah.
Oh, really? Why don't you go fuck yourself? So, I'm just kidding.
I'm just surprised.
We used to get made fun of. Like, you couldn't be on the bowling team. It was, like, the uncoolest thing in the world to do in my school. So, I had my own ball. So, I used to sneak my ball. Like, I would bring it in my car, and then I would leave it in my car and go run and get it, and then to go take the bus to, you know, like, there was a lot of subterfuge that I needed to use to be a bowler. But, yeah, I'm pretty sweet bowler.
Do you still bowl?
Yeah, occasionally, but it's, you know, I'm not as good as I was, but still, it's like, people don't like bowling with somebody who's good at it.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants to like do it like it's karaoke. Like, it's funny when you're bad, but I'm like, oh, is it? I wouldn't know.
At Golden Greggy wants to know, how old were you when you had your first kiss?
I was in seventh grade. Her name was Kate Peacock, and it was behind the dumpster at a 7-Eleven. And I was terrified that her tongue would taste bad for some reason. And then it was fine, but it was so quick that I, like, when we were walking away, I was like, I could probably do that for a lot longer. But it was too late. The moment was ruined. So.
How old were you, Ryan?
Probably, like, 8.
I don't remember it, but I remember my mom telling me I got in trouble in kindergarten for kissing Lindsay behind the coat racks.
Uh-huh.
We would just, like, get behind those little coat racks and just make out. Mouths closed, making out.
Yeah.
I have no recollection of it, but yeah. Started young.
Oh, I'm talking about my first like open mouth, like get in there.
Probably fifth grade.
Yeah. Wow, you were that guy?
Yeah.
Phew. Yeah. I remember that guy's name from my school, Eric. He used to make out with his girlfriend and everybody would watch.
I remember it was snowing. It was freezing cold.
Oh, it was romantic.
And we were like, we're going to go outside behind the tree and kiss. It was chilly.
I had mine in the freezing cold behind some trees too.
Yeah.
I think that could probably
sounds like a sounds like the beginning of a murder mystery.
What was that dude's name?
Oh, hey.
Just kidding. That's the easiest one ever.
This one comes from okay, this is not so much a question, but I wanted to get your take on it. Wesley Carr had a merchandising idea. Guy code action figures with their own recorded dialogue that also belch and make farting noises.
This is a pitch? Is this Shark Tank or whatever it is?
Would you want your own action figure?
Yeah, but I want my action figure to be able to arrange knickknacks in an artful manner. That's my superpower, is that I can make a room look very peaceful and romantic
feng
stuff.
Shui.
Yeah, my superpower is feng shui.
What would be your quotes? What are the ones that most people say to you when they see you?
I guess, what is my quote? That's you can't put somebody on a spot like that. Like
that's
they have
a
catchphrase.
My personal favorite quote of yours is, girls are a lot like Vietnam.
Oh, yeah.
They're hot. I can't remember it all.
Yeah, they're hot. They're confusing.
You're never
and you're
win.
Never going to win. Yeah. That's a pretty good one. I like that one. Another one is, it only matters what other people think. You're just one person. Everybody else is like everybody.
It's very true. Words and live by.
Yeah.
This is from Bram Houston.
Okay.
Or Houston. It's Houston. Yo, it's agents guy code. Oh.
I think he meant it's against
Yo,
guy
is
code.
It? Oh, okay. Yo, is it against guy code when you are a wingman to your homie and the girl falls for you and you go with it? So.
That's the kind of suspicious question where he's leaving some shit out.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't being a wingman. He was hitting on that girl.
And it worked out.
Yeah. If you're a true wingman, they'll never choose you because not only are you making your friend look better, you're making yourself look kind of worse or invisible. And that guy was not doing that. I'll tell you that right now. He was like, hey, my friend's pretty cool, but I'm even better. So that's definitely what was going on.
He walked away.
I never made a good wingman. I was terrible at it because I can't stop talking. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just, when I used to go out, I just, like, I can't turn it off. So there's no way I could be supportive. If anything, the only way I was an effective wingman was I was going to make you step up your game.
I'm the worst wingman on the planet.
Yeah. Well, you're like the strong silent type. It's like the worst kind of wingman ever.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm not going to walk up and be like, hey, you should check out my friend.
You know what? Finding a true, excellent wingman is like one of the rarest, hardest finds in the world.
Yeah.
You know? That's why Vince Vaughn's so popular. In movies, because he in Swingers, he played the ultimate wingman.
Yeah.
He was so great at it.
It's the best wingman movie out there.
All right, we're going to wrap it up. Do you have anything to plug coming up? This will go up soon.
I'm going on tour with Jimmy Fallon in December, so you can check those dates at the Clean Cut Comedy Tour. So that'll be fun. And I'm on Chelsea Lately all the time now. What else? Not really. I mean, I have, like, stuff in development that I'm not, you know, I have a script at Comedy Central and stuff like that. But mostly, I guess, just follow me on Twitter, at Jules Mack. And, try to treat girls better at a young age. I know it's hard, but that's my advice to you because it'll help you later in life, trust me. So, that's it.
That's good advice.
Good thing to end on. All right. Follow Ryan Ling at Ryan_Ling and follow me at B. Ryan McKee. See you next week.